Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
Are you getting the best deal, the best value, the biggest bang for your buck? Remember, folks, cheapest isn't always cheap. Cheapest isn't always the cheapest. Now, I know that you're familiar with all these low-cost brokerage deals and all these offers and free trades and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to go over that. We're going to talk about that to make sure that you're getting the best value for your dollar and the most transparency. Transparency is key. That's really where the rubber hits the road. That's where you find out. The problem is you got to dig down so deep to unravel all those little relationships, the backdoor deals, all the kind of fee-sharing arrangements, that it makes it difficult to really figure out what is the best deal for you. Now, how do you do that? Well, let's take a step back. Well, first, let me introduce the show. I guess I'm remiss. Welcome to Your Money Radio, folks. I'm your host, Danny Stewart. Tim is working remotely at his office in Pennsylvania, but I do have Dandy Don Vandenborg from St. Augustine, Florida on the line, portfolio extraordinaire. Don, how are you?
I'm doing great, Daniel. How are you? Can we call you Stormy Daniel?
Stormy Daniel. That's pretty funny, Don.
I'm a funny guy, Dan.
You're just full of humor today. Stormy Daniel. I'm going to write that down, put that in the intro. Stormy Daniel. All right.
Well, glad to see you.
Do you want me to put on some lingerie and dance for you, Don?
I will pass on that. Luckily, you're in Texas and I'm in Florida.
Hey, I was in Florida last week. I was down and my feelings were hurt. You didn't come down and see me. I was staying down in West Palm.
Sure they were.
They were down in West Palm Beach and had to go take care of a little business, business down there. And went down there and was down there for the weekend, took my lovely daughter. She had a blast. She was like a pig, and I won't use the word on the radio, but it's a phrase. I'm sure you've heard it before. Like a pig at the trough. She had a blast. So anyway, I want to get back to this.
How was the weather? Was it stormy, Daniel?
Oh, there you go. Don, you're on fire today. Actually, we did have a storm. You know what's funny is, so this time, normally we stay at Jupiter, Juno, a little bit north of West Palm, where we're doing what we need to do down there. And this time, I thought, I'm going to hang out in the land of fruits and nuts. I'm going to stay actually in right downtown West Palm Beach. I got this really cherry deal, a really good deal. You know, I was using one of those aggregators, not TripAdvisor. What's the one that gets them all anyway? And so I got a deal at the Hilton in West Palm Beach, and I had I got Hilton Rewards. So we stayed there, and it's kind of a big T-shaped pool, got it really cool and hot. And she just, my daughter's half fish, loves to swim. Anyway, So we're out there, Don. We get our, but we get there that very first night. We get down there. We start going out to the pool. She just starts getting in, and there is a huge wall, a thunderstorm, kind of right on the edge, but it's close. It's not raining above us, but you can smell the rain. You can see it just looks like it's 4 or 5 blocks away. But there is lightning. I mean lightning, not just a little lightning, a lot of lightning. And I said, Sydney, get out of the pool. Okay. Because she knows the deal. If there's lightning that's close enough that there's no swimming. There's 20, 25 kids in the pool. There's an attendant there handing out towels or doing whatever. Doesn't budge. And I'm looking at him thinking, really? You know, one good lightning strike, you kill 20 kids, this hotel's done.
No kidding.
It was beyond me. And people stayed in there. The lightning kind of got close, got worse. It sprinkled for a minute, but then it kind of went literally just by us. But it was the lightning was no question close enough to where it could easily hit right where we were.
And were it, you it was close it, to the beach.
It's only about it's in they call it City Place, which is kind of like the downtown area. But it's probably maybe a quarter mile, half a mile. Yeah, I mean it's pretty close. It's not right on the beach. No. Next time
if there's a strong breeze coming from the ocean, it very frequently will keep those storms off the beach. It'll rain everywhere except for like the first mile or half mile from the ocean.
Right.
It happens here in St. Augustine all the time.
Right. Well, anyway, but lightning, as you know, lightning can travel pretty far. And it was just amazing to me that, and when I say pretty far, this was close, Don. I mean, it looked like lightning was hitting the ground probably 10, 15 blocks away. I mean, it was close. It was not, I'm not talking about off in the distance, off in the sun. I'm not talking about, you know, a couple miles away. I mean, this looked like it was just a quarter mile away from us.
I'm semi-glad you survived.
And then after that, it was beautiful. I mean, it was a very nice short weekend. One of these times, I'm going to try to stay at Sanger Island. That's supposed to be kind of cool. Anyway, I digress, folks. I know you don't want to hear about me and the fun I had last weekend, although I'm a very fun guy. We want to talk about you and how you get the biggest bang for your buck, how you make your stretch your dollar and get the best overall price or value for you. Now, you know, most people, you guys are familiar with the low-cost brokerage firms like Vanguard and Fidelity. And there are even some smaller brokerage firms. A lot of people would think, well, why would you even use those? And what would be the reason to go anywhere else? Well, I'll tell you why. Are their fees really more expensive? Are there better opportunities? Now, the thing that should drive your brokerage firm, your custody, who's going to be the custody of your assets, really depends on your strategy. Because your strategy will drive your decision of where you should go. For instance, and this is going to be on one extreme, if you do want to invest in physical assets like precious metals, physical gold and silver, or platinum, palladium, or even real estate, Schwab and Fidelity and Vanguard, they won't let you do that. However, you can do that, even in an IRA. A lot of people don't know that. You can, if you customize a 401k, if the plan trustees allow it, you could actually own real estate in a 401k. Bet you didn't know that. But then you need an alternative custodian for an IRA. So there are alternative custodians out there that allow you to hold physical assets within an IRA, precious metals, real estate. Now, I'm not recommending precious metals because if you can do it outside of an IRA, you don't turn it into ordinary income when you take a distribution. And so I'm not saying that's the best way to go. I'm saying that is, but for real estate, if that's where most your money is and you can't do a real estate deal otherwise because you don't have enough money on the outside, then possibly a real estate deal could be in an IRA. Now, it you need an alternative custodian because there's a few nuances to it. You've got to get an appraisal on the property at least once a year. There are a little bit more cost. It can run into the hundreds of dollars a year. But if you got a big enough, or even $1,000 or so, but if you got a big enough piece of real estate, okay. Now, that is the extreme. Now, for the more mainstream, if you're simply indexing, which believe me, I'm not recommending, we don't necessarily believe in that here. I mean, there's times you can do it and times that it's very dangerous. So we're not recommending it. But if you're simply going to buy a pie chart for all seasons and sit there and never make any changes, then absolutely the lowest cost like a Vanguard or a Schwab is suitable for the mutual funds and ETFs. However, if you're an active investor, or even more so a trader, an active trader, then TD Ameritrade or Interactive Brokers might work better for you, depending on whether the trading platform or transaction cost are more important. So a lot of people don't know this. Interactive Brokers is actually cheaper than Schwab, Fidelity, you know, Vanguard. It on transaction costs for stocks, it's very, very inexpensive. Now, they don't have a set rate. Depends on how much trading you do and how much money you have with them. I mean, they've got kind of a tiered thing, so you have to look. So it varies. It's not like a flat fix $4.95 like Schwab or Fidelity. Now, if the research and the trading platform is more important, then TD Ameritrade's Thinkorswim Toss is extremely good. You can get all kinds of research on Thinkorswim that a lot of platforms don't have, both fundamental and technical and economic data. It really is a pretty slick system. So how you're going to invest will determine where you're going to go or where you should go. Now, here's the other thing. With regard to these low-cost fees or even these free, they tell, oh, it's free. It's, you know, you got free transactions. That's the rage now. Well, nothing is free, folks. So the Schwabs and the Vanguards of the world, and I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it just is. They give you a free transaction because they're sharing the fees with that ETF or mutual fund. They're splitting fees with them. And it's disclosed, but you kind of got to dig a little bit and figure out what the deal is. So with the fund, so there, you know, like TD has a group of ETFs, a family. I think it's, I'll ask Don in a minute, but I think it's Spiders or something where they've got a relationship. And for all of their family, if you have that ETF for 60, you know, some short time period, it's a free transaction. There's no charge. That's because they get a nice sharing ratio. Now, is that bad or good? Well, no, it's fine if that's the strategy you're going to use anyway. And if you were going to use that ETF anyway. But if you can find a better ETF in that same genre that's going to do better, maybe you just want to pay the $4.95 or the $6.95 transaction fee. Maybe you don't want the free transaction. So you got to go into it with your eyes open. That's why it's really important. And by the way, you'll get steered toward, directed to, guided to, whatever word you want to use, toward those free transaction funds because that's what they're trying to push. It benefits their firm, not you. So you need to figure out your strategy in isolation without worrying about the fees and the cost first, and figure out the pure strategy you want. And then from there, default into where the best option is. Now, another key factor when you're investing is, are you investing yourself? Or are you going to use an advisor? We'd love you to use us, obviously. We're an active money manager, for those of you who don't know. But if you're investing on your own, using stocks and or margin, especially with margin, Interactive Brokers, again, has the lowest transaction fees, yet being a full I mean, there's ways to get literally extremely cheap trades, penny, but there is no support. There is no, you almost have to have a friend on the floor of the exchange. I mean, it's I'm a little tongue in cheek, but all I'm saying is these ones that I'm throwing out here right now, these are discount brokerage firms, but they're still considered, you have enough bells and whistles. They still give you enough support that you've got everything you need. Now, they even have a lower transaction cost than Schwab or Fidelity. Most people don't know that. Now, your strategy and investing trading patterns will determine the specific fee structure, like I said before. If you're super active, you may want thinkorswim and pay a slight premium. Their trades at $6.95. Some advisors can get those trades down cheaper than that $6.95, but the whole point is it's generally $6.95. Now, but here's a bigger issue. If you're an individual investor, it just depends on what you want to do. If you're using an advisor, the bigger issue than which brokerage firm is separating the advice from the custody of your assets. This is for your own protection. But even at low discount firms like Fidelity, there are conflicts of interest for the investor. I just explained a few. So even if you're charged an AUM, asset under management, wherever you are, if that quote advisor has a Series 6 or Series 7, that means they're a broker. They can be duly registered, but that means that they represent that brokerage firm. They're not independent of that brokerage firm. So even if they're charging you a flat fee basis, they still get told what to put. They're still influenced on what to sell and what to present to you. That's why, in my opinion, you want a fee-based only registered investment advisor, an IRA, who is your fiduciary and is not duly registered as a broker. Okay? And again, the whole reason, so those are just food for thought. But remember, folks, going back to this cheap or even transaction fee funds, the brokerage firm gets paid a piece of those funds. So it's not always the cheapest for you, and it's certainly not that transparent. It's not that obvious. You got to dig deep. That's why I don't like the way that's kind of set up. So you just got to keep your eyes open and don't check your brain at the door. Figure out what you want to do and how you want to do it, but the strategy is paramount. The strategy will decide, will very much help you make that decision for you. And all these brokerage firms, they're like a commodity. They piggyback one over. One's got a little bit better customer service. One's got a cooler trading platform. They're all pretty good if you're using one of the, mainstream large custodians. But I would caution you about getting your advice from that custodian. Don, you got any thoughts on that? You want to jump in here?
I think if you're a very active trader, you want to have two brokerage accounts. They in times of heavy volume, sometimes the systems get under extreme stress, and you always want to have a backup option to your primary option. In fact, I think I agree with you that Interactive Brokers is probably the best bang for the buck, and there's nothing to keep you from doing a bunch of research, having accounts that say Thinkorswim and Interactive Brokers, doing your research on the Thinkorswim platform and doing the majority of your trades on the Interactive Broker platform. But if you're very active, you've got a lot of money, I think you should have at least two.
You're saying have a backup somewhere.
And
I wasn't necessarily saying Interactive Broker is the best. It definitely is one of the lowest cost. So
yes,
you got to look at the support you get for that lowest. And by the way, folks, here's a really important question most people do not realize. there's explicit cost and there's implicit cost. I talked to a guy about this the other day. He goes, what are you talking about? How would I ever know that? So you could get a 495 or you could get a 295 trade. But if you pay $50 more on that execution versus a 695 trade, did you make money? No, you lost $46. So the whole point is execution of the trade, how they route your orders, where they the trading system in the United States is fragmented. So there's different, I don't want to dive too deep, but ICNs and different exchanges that you can route your trade to. Some brokerage firms have better routing patterns than others. And so execution of the trade is very important. Most people, that just goes right over their head. They have no idea. So they think they got the best deal and, oh man, I'm getting 295 trades. Guess what? They're getting screwed $30 about every fifth or sixth trade because they got a lousy fill. I mean, I hate to tell you that, but unless you understand how the system works, anyway. So figure out what your strategy is, figure out what you want to do. And by the way, again, if you're using margin, I'm not suggesting you do. If you use margin, you better know what the hell you're doing, because that's using leverage. You got to be more right. But if you're good and you're using margin, that's fine and well, but you need to shop around, because margin interest expense varies greatly, greatly between brokers. And so if one's charging you 4 or 5%, I'm just throwing out numbers, and one's charging you 7 or 8%, man, that's a significant difference. And your hurdle rate to make money is even higher, almost double. So anyway, all right, I've said my piece. I just wanted to get into that a little bit, Dandy Don. By the way, one thing I did want to mention, folks, we are actually, so I am going to, I've got to go do some things down in San Antonio this weekend. And so I'm trying to get out of town right at the market close. We're actually taping this a little bit early, late Friday morning before the market closes. So when we do the market update later in the show with Dandy Don, he doesn't have the clarity of the close. He's not going to have all the numbers. So it's going to be very important to tune into his weekly, daily update, where he's going to go over the whole week and then what's heading into next week in great detail after the close. If you haven't signed up for our newsletter, you can go to revereasset.com, revereasset.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Promise you we won't spam you or send you a whole bunch of crap. It's up to the client or the person to reach out to us. It's for it's for education and learning and transparency. And we even talk about things that we do ourselves. I mean, Tim talked about two trades we just took a couple days ago, two stocks. We don't give you everything, but we give you quite a bit and a lot of actionable ideas for you to research. Don't just go out and buy something because we told you to do it, because even though we're doing it, we may have got a better entry point, number one. And number two, when we sell it in 2 weeks or 2 months or whenever we sell it, we might not have remembered that we mentioned buying it on the radio 2, 3, 4 months earlier. And we may not tell you to sell it at the right. I mean, we don't give out 100% of all of our trades. So, but it is some very good information. By the way, if you want to reach out to us, my email is dan@revereasset.com. Don is Don at Revere Asset. Tim is Tim at Revere Asset. You can follow us on Twitter. Mine is @1 Danny Stewart. Don is @DVandenBoard with a D, Vandenbord. And Tim is @TJRazor. Razor is spelled Reazor, R-E-A-Z-O-R. All right.
Hey, shocker, we'll talk about our losers too.
Oh, yes. That's, when we got audited, we get audited about once every 4 years by the regulators. You know, they're doing their job. Good for them. And so a couple of years, the first thing when she was talking about, she goes, okay, now how do you market stuff? I said, well, we do a daily podcast. And by the way, we also do a radio show, podcast once a week. You ought to go and listen. She goes, oh, yeah, I've already listened to your last 5 shows. So she actually came in prepared. And so she said, yeah. And she goes, you know, and I actually was impressed. You actually talked about like two or three stocks that didn't work out well, where you cut the losses quick and, you know, they were losers. She goes, I'm actually shocked. I've never, advisors hardly ever, I've not run across that, where people talk about the ones that don't work out too. I mean, most firms, all they're talking about is the ones that did well. So anyway, I took that as a pat on the back, even though the audit was, you know, like going to the dentist. Just the nature of the beast. All right. Now, along those same lines, okay, I do want to talk about, you know, the custody and all that stuff, and we talked about that. What's the best custodian broker for you? It depends. There is no one blanket vanilla answer. And those big brokerage firms and insurance companies, whoever, they also put lots of money into marketing and the financial media and the financial news, which leads me sort of to a dovetail topic. The show's going to have kind of a theme today, is the information you're getting biased? Do you get information like from CNBC or wherever, Fox Business, and MSNBC, what, you know, Yahoo Finance, it doesn't matter, that can help you? Is it usable? Is it actionable? Or is it biased? I've always told people, always look at the advertisers on any, on a periodical, a magazine, on the, like if you just turn the volume down on CNBC for 2 hours and just watch the advertisers, and then you turn up the volume, it'll, the topics will start making a lot more. You go, oh, now I get it. But they do have some good host on there. You've got to learn to separate the wheat from the chaff. That's the problem. And by the way, a lot of those people going on CNBC, they're going on for a 3 minute, 5 minute hit. Oh, well, let's bring on so-and-so from Money Management. Do you know that they're paying $2,000-$3,000, or, you know, they're paying to be on there, to get their name on there so that they can take their little screenshot, their little 2 minute video, and then they can put it on their website, and then they can say, oh, he's a CNBC contributor. It's pay to play, except for the really, really heavyweights that everybody wants to get on. You know, Warren Buffett doesn't pay. He's a fundamental guy, and there's a few other guys that don't pay, you know. But a lot of those people that come on, the vast majority of them, they're pay for play. So that's marketing. That's not necessarily actionable news. Jim Cramer comes to mind. I mean, he's on there, booyah, and giving those, you know, advice, and he's even got caught. He's admitted, oh yeah, no, my show is for entertainment. Now, he used to have a girl on there, Stephanie Link, and she's a big fundamental purse investor, and she worked for right under him as his chief strategist for a while, and she was actually great. In fact, on the show I used to have here in town, the Wall Street Shuffle with Dan Kofal before he passed away, we used to have her on once a week. That's when we also had Tim on once a week before he came on board with my firm here. But Stephanie was very sharp, very smart, but she moved on to bigger and better things, and so now she's with a big, big money management firm. I think she's like the chief strategist or one of the big ones for TIA Kreft, I believe. Don't quote me on that. But the whole point is Jim Cramer, when he comes on there and he hears this thing, oh, and he gives you advice in 20 seconds or less, or a minute or less. Oh, this stock, you got to do this. I just don't think you have enough time in 2 minutes to really be able to evaluate something or evaluate a stock. But in any event, Dave Ramsey's another one. Now, he gives some good advice about getting your expenses under control, cutting your credit card debt and paying it down. But be careful, because he also tells you to cut up your credit cards. Folks, you cut up your credit cards, you cancel that credit card, that can temporarily hurt your credit. Number one, you close a credit line of credit account, but also if you had a $20,000 credit limit on that card, and now that $20,000 of credit goes away, your debt to equity ratio just went up. It affects your credit. You cut up your credit cards, it will affect your credit negatively. So I'm not saying you shouldn't pay down the credit card debt. Obviously you should, yes. But you don't necessarily want to cut up the credit card itself. The one other thing is, he's always saying use cash or don't use credit cards. Yet all over his website, that's how you pay him. He takes credit cards. That's how he gets paid. Lastly, and these are just some examples. I'm just kind of painting a broad brush on all these various different people. Don Carter, who's a CNBC chartist, and I've watched him on there a few times. A month or two ago, I can't remember exact date. I want to say it's about a month and a half ago when the market was under pressure. He came out and said, man, the FANG stocks, the technology stocks, are really weak, and they're going to underperform going forward. Man, there's a huge rotation going on, and you need to get out, essentially, is what he was saying. Well, now, we did notice that the technology stocks were coming under some pressure. And Don, you even mentioned to me that utilities, the relative strength for utilities and bonds were actually strengthening at that time, kind of a flight to, quote, quality. Okay. But since then, the NASDAQ has hit all-time highs and the FANG stocks have surged. So did you adjust your portfolio? You, the listener, did you make changes? If you acted on his advice on CNBC, did you go back and change again? Or did he, Don Carter, come back and tell you, oop, it reversed back? So yeah, it got weak a little bit. All right, now it's time to ramp back up. And he may have. I don't know. I don't watch CNBC every day. I'm too busy doing our research in-house here, not watching financial marketing. We tongue-in-cheek call it financial fake news, but that's why you got to make sure that your research is independent, buy-side only research. And let me define that. Buy-side only means buy-side research is, it's for the investor. It's not sell-side research put out by the brokerage firms. See, at the brokerage firm, the custodian, that sounds good. Oh, they're your custody, your assets. You think that you're the client. You're the cattle. They're taking you to market. Their biggest clients are their corporations or governments or whatever, who they're underwriting money, either selling bonds or issuing stocks to. And when they have stuff in inventories, when they call the cowboys to come bring in the herd to push what they need to get rid of, to sell. The financial media is tied in with a lot of these brokerage firms. So the sell side, a lot of times the sell side analysts are working for the brokerage firms. I mean, it's just like the other day, and I'll let Don talk about this in just 1 minute. I know you're chomping the bit, Don. They'll give a downgrade yet raise the price target. What? Excuse me? How do you do that? Oh, we had a price target of 200, but we're going to make it 250. But man, the stock sucks. It's downgraded. That makes no logical sense. So the whole point is, sell side research comes from the person trying to sell. That's like getting research from a car you want to buy from the salesman, from the car salesman, or from the dealership. Don't you normally kind of go do some research on the car you want to buy independently? You don't just go to the dealer and say, I've got 50 grand. What's the best car you can sell? What car do you think I need? You go in there with a damn good idea of what you want and what you need. That's the same thing with investing, folks. You need to have your research in front of you, and you need to get your research from someone who's independent and non-biased. Your financial sources, media sources, your research for the numbers, all that kind of stuff. That's why they have independent audits of companies, so that you can at least be more sure that the numbers the company's feeding you are in fact good numbers. That's why you want to look at audited financial statements, not prospectus or what they tell you. All right, Don, I'll get off my bully pulpit. You want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, you said Don Carter. The guy's name's Carter Worth.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
But whether it's him or it's Kramer or if it's something we're talking about on a podcast, you've got to make your own decisions. And the most important thing is you've got to have an exit plan when you make those decisions. You can buy something based off of a fortune cookie you got at a Chinese restaurant, but just make sure that you're not going to lose 50% on it. Don't even lose 30% on it. If you're lucky, keep it to under 10% and keep it sized properly in your portfolio. You got to look for an edge, and the edge exists in doing a little bit of research on the company, not just because some talking head somewhere says something about it, because if they're like us, they could change their mind within a day to a week to a month, depending on the action of that. We judge everything based on its own individual
setup, yeah. What it looks
characteristics, like. Yeah. You know, on its own merits is whether something stays in our portfolios or gets booted out. So that's really the most important thing is anything you buy, know where you're deciding that you're wrong and you're getting out.
Fair enough. Absolutely right. Now, I'm sorry. You're right. I did have that guy's name wrong. Couple things that I do want to talk about, and then we're going to get into the markets as of where they are currently, Friday late morning, and a couple things that you need to watch for. I want to answer just a couple of questions that I fielded on Investopedia, just a couple of and these have different, they're slightly different each one, but there's a theme here that are common. When I see the questions, there's a lot of common questions that seem to come back up. And I'll take this one first, Don. So it says, you know, I'm approaching 50, single, have about 2 million total assets, 1 million in a 401k, 500 in cash, 500 in stocks. I don't own a home, but plan on buying one the next couple years. Monthly expenses, 10 grand, but I could go down to 7. I have no debt, employed in a good job. Given all this information, how well am I positioned for the future? Should I be doing anything different with my asset allocation? Now, I'm going to give you my answer, but folks, he didn't really give much at all, except he's got 25% in stocks, got 25% in cash that we know of, and then the other millions in an IRA. I have no idea what the hell his IRA's in. Bonds, cash, stocks. An IRA is not an investment. It's just a type of account. It's a receptacle. It's not an investment. And even people that have a decent amount of money don't understand this. A lot of people don't. So I said, you're well positioned regarding the amount you've amassed, so congratulations. Without knowing what strategy you employ, I can't give you sage advice. I can give you some ideas to generate questions for you to address. Most important, how would you protect these assets from a major correction or bear market? How will you respond emotionally if you lose 25 to 30% of your current allocation? And then I kind of stole this from Don or Tim. They bring it up on this podcast all the time. Actually, it's Mike Tyson that says it. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So you need to have a plan before the swings start getting thrown. Okay. I said, you said you're employed in a good quote, in a good position. I'm assuming that you're not cannibalizing the 2 million in order to meet the 10K monthly expenses. In other words, I hope he's getting over 120 net, so that his 2 million is growing. Also, are you saving or adding to the 2 million? So I need to have a better picture of your cash flow, to you know, come up with a plan. I said, but let's just start with the nest egg and ignore the rest for the moment. 25% cash. I do think that with 25% cash, you have a cash drag in your overall portfolio. Believe me, I'm not saying you should be fully invested at all times, and I'm not a set it and forget it pie chart advisor. Things change, and so should your portfolio on an ongoing basis. You know, I talked a little bit about our fiat, you know, and for instance, you know, you ought to do this. But I said you can dial up and dial down risk using cash depending on the current market environment. Currently, we will sometimes have 10%, sometimes 15%. And if the market begins to break down, we could go as high as 40% or even higher, or possibly use hedging techniques. Currently, we have around 10%. Don, you want to update that? Isn't it around 10?
Slightly. Yeah, at least 10, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But well, it's not just your cash position. It's
yeah, the beta within, it's yeah. Folks, you could have 20% cash, but if you got all go-go stocks besides the cash, you could be moving twice as much as the market. In other words, if you have stocks that have a 2 or 2.5 beta, it's the beta of the total portfolio. It's the volatility of the total portfolio, not just the cash. That's what a lot of people miss. Okay, but if you, but, so I'm going on with the answer, but if you have a static 25% at all times, especially in this low interest rate environment, you're putting a cash drag on your overall investments. It makes your investment hurdle rate on the assets that are invested even higher. Here's the other thing, folks. He's guaranteeing a loss on the $500,000 ongoing. Inflation is eating up that $500,000, so he's having these little teeny losses year in, year out. It's like death like with 1,000 cuts. Here's the takeaway, though. I said you do not mention how your IRA is invested, stocks, bonds, commodities, cash, etc. The IRA itself is just a type of an account or receptacle for investments. So this guy possibly could be 50 or 80% cash. I have no idea. I said in this rising rate environment, bonds are much riskier than they were just a year ago. Most bond sectors have come under pressure this year, although they have come back recently. I said, again, I need a better picture of how you're invested to give you better strategy. Main thing, here's the takeaway, folks. I said we have a sell discipline for every position in our portfolio to prevent us from losing big in a major market correction. Regular market fluctuations and pullbacks are okay and healthy and normal, but it, once certain levels are hit, selling begets selling and risk increases and accelerates very quickly. We can always get back in the market when it stabilizes. So the two risks you have to manage are drawdown risk and whipsaw risk. And once you, when you manage one, you tighten up one, you kind of increase the other until you get below both of them, until they both break. Folks, that's an important point. So if you keep real tight stops, 2, 4, 5%, then you get whipsawed more often. I'm not saying that's bad if that's where you're setting your portfolio. So you have less drawdown risk, but more whipsaw risk. You get whipsawed more often. If you widen out the stops so now they can go down 8-10%. Now you have, you cut out a lot of the whipsaws, but the portfolio has a larger draw. So that you have larger drawdown risk. So that all of a sudden, it's a trade-off. Now, once you hit that maximum drawdown, 8%, whatever it is, then both of them are in cash and they're positively correlated, but they're actually negatively correlated in that early zone. That's important to understand. And you can have a strategy that has a little bit of best of both worlds, that you kind of manage both. You could either have very, very tight, or you could have you can adjust that. It's very important. The main thing is you have to have a mathematical plan in advance so you know what it is. And again, I told him the biggest problem is in this low interest rate environment, there is currently no quote safe money that pays you enough to keep up with inflation, you know, CDs, money markets, none of that stuff is going to keep up with inflation. Now with rates on the rise, at some point they're going to be more attractive and you may be able to switch, but at that point it just depends. Lastly, I said, I will give you my thoughts on the home. With interest rates rising, we're getting in the later innings of the home. You just might consider being more patient and waiting for a sell-off and hold home prices till you get in if you're not in any hurry. I did say you're in great position with your assets. You just got to manage the downside risk. Lastly, I said, do not. See, the one thing I was worried about, when you put stuff like that on a forum, you're going to get all kinds of advisors talking about, oh, guaranteed safe money, never lose money. And I said, be careful about doing indexed annuities. They're going to run you illustrations showing you 6, 7, 8%. It won't happen. You won't get that over time. Yes, those indexed annuities will mitigate downside risk. You won't have downside risk, but you're not going to get nearly the upside you think. All right, so that was one.
Hey, Dan, you got to let me comment on that.
Oh, well, go ahead. I'm sorry. That was the one you probably just really salivating over.
So if that guy would have sent that email in the beginning of 2007, so he's really talking about his expenses, assuming that he was pulling the expenses out of that $2 million, is about 5%. A year, which is very reasonable. But if you had no cell discipline, which was the most important part of your reply, if you fast forward 2 years, he'd be sending that same email with assuming that he had, the 75% of it in stocks. He'd be sending that email, but he wouldn't say 2 million. He'd be saying 1.275 million. And now all of a sudden he's nearly doubled the percent that he's pulling out of
he
it.
Needs.
So.
And more importantly, he'd be paralyzed by fear.
Paralyzed by fear.
And then that affects his strategy, right?
We preach it all the time, but there's reasons why our clients are able to sleep well at night, and that's because of our cell discipline on everything that we own. In every holding that we have in the house, we know where we're getting out.
Right.
And we know what our downside limit is. I saw one of the midday hosts on CNBC bragging about his firm and how they've got a plan A, B, C, and how it'll help the client reach their goals, whether or not the scenario A, B, or C is hit. That's a bunch of bullshit. You're going to tell me that those
tell
scenarios,
us how you really feel, Don.
You're going to tell me that those scenarios A, B, and C accounted for two. If they were presented in 1999, did those scenarios A, B, and C account for a 50% drawdown from 2000 to 2002 and 2007, 2009, and the fact that from 2000 to 2009, stocks gained 0%?
Well,
it's crap. And this came up on Twitter again from somebody else this week, and I replied, this is why we don't do BS pie charts at Revere Asset. The worst decade ever for stocks, we just completed it. Right. So how can you present somebody with a plan and tell them to stick with it when that plan includes losing an average of 2% every year for the next decade? That's nonsense.
Or 25-30% all in one fell swoop.
So, yeah, I was averaging it out.
No, I know what you're doing. I was clarifying that for the listener, right? Because they were going too. So what Don's saying is you need a lot of different scenarios, and it varies. And one of the scenarios has to be look, we're not trying to doom and gloom. We're bullish right now. We're almost fully invested. But one of the scenarios has to be, what if we do go through a major bear market or start to go into it? One of those scenarios has to be lots of cash, some short ETFs to hedge or make money, and possibly gold and treasuries, which become positively correlated during fear. They'll actually go up together, maybe. And so the price is truth. We always say that here. The charts will tell you what you need to do. But the whole point is, if one of those A, B, and C scenarios, that guy on CNBC isn't going to almost no equities, lots of cash, possibly a sliver of commodities, some short ETFs. That's got to be one. And by the way, three scenarios is not enough. I mean, you need a scenario where you're almost 100% long and you've got a nice, I don't want to say pie chart, but mix of different stocks and different sectors. You do need some diversification. You can't go all technology stocks. You need some industrial, I got that. But when the market goes down, here's the problem, folks, that lie about diversification. They all go down together. When the market sells off, 80% of stocks go down. That means good stocks go down as well as bad stocks. So sometimes it's time to say, you know what? I'm out. Money is not made evenly. Sometimes you just making 0 or 2% or even losing 2 or 4% is great if the market goes down big. So you need a bunch of different, they call it scenario analysis, but you need a Monte Carlo simulation, whatever you want to call it. You need lots of different scenarios. A, B, and C doesn't cut it. The reason they're doing that, I'm not telling you, preaching to you, Don, I know you know this. The reason they make you do that, folks, is they think you're stupid. They think you cannot, you know, it's like the sound bites, oh, people's attention span are only 20 seconds or 5 seconds or 2 seconds. They can't keep their concentration span. We need to give them just two or three choices, make it very simple. So they give you A, B, or C, or red light, green light, yellow light, or, you know, just this or this. Because they want it, they don't want to, quote, confuse you. I'll tell you what, investing is a whole spectrum. It's a whole spectrum, and you vary and you dial up and down that risk scale constantly, depending on the market environment. You don't have to make changes every day. That's not what I'm saying also. But you do have to make changes a decent amount of time if you want to manage risk adequately. And look, there'll be some times that we're behind the S&P a couple percent. Sometimes we're above it a couple percent. I don't get too jazzed up about that. As long as we're making good, decent risk-adjusted returns, because I know there's going to come a time when the market takes a huge meltdown and we're not going to be part of it, or we're going to miss a lion's share of it. And that's what it's all about. That's when you really can get a bang for your buck. All right. So
Sky also posted recently that they're not picking individual stocks for clients anymore because it's too hard.
Actually, this year's a stock picker's market. Our portfolios this year, we've got five portfolios, folks. Our portfolios that have stocks versus ETFs only are doing much better because right now it's a stock picking market. So anyway, all right.
It's too hard, Dan. It's too hard.
Well, another reason they do that is that you get to do a lot of research and do a lot of work. They'd rather just use an ETF. They can go buy a spider ETF and be done with it, or a sector ETF.
I don't have
ETF.
Time to pick stocks. I have to be on CNBC at lunchtime.
Or they're asset gatherers. See, they're actually a salesman. They're not the guy running the money. They're not actually managing your money. They're out there to play golf with you and hold your hand and coddle you, and they're managing the relationship. God, I hate when they say that. We used to go get trained, but I used to have to work for brokers from the 90s. Now, your job is just to manage the relationship, and then we'll kind of tell you which funds to put them in. Like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Sorry. I'll see you. All right. So very quickly, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to keep moving, Don. 58-year-old woman needs to retire from retirement. What's the best way to save? I'm a 58-year-old woman, have a wonderful job, paying six figures. Currently, my employer contributes 25% of my salary and bonus each year into an account, not a fund of any kind, for me. I have no idea what that means. I already have a traditional IRA that I use to roll my 401k over to. So she does have a 401k. All right. I also have a Roth with a very small amount that I'm not doing anything with. I'll be retiring in 10 years, and 25% of my retirement account will not be enough to retire. So I feel like I need to do something else. Damn straight, you do. So I need to take, should I take some of my paycheck and contribute to my Roth? Well, you got to contribute to something. I don't know, but here's the thread in here, the common thread. Again, these people are thinking an IRA is a type of investment. It's what's in the IRA. So again, I said the types of accounts or receptacles you place your savings in are important, but much more important is the investment strategy you employ. You provided a few details or tidbits of information, but without knowing more details, the account already accumulated inside your IRAs, the type of account, how much your employer's putting money in. You know, I can't give you good advice. It's kind of that same thing when, you know, but the whole point is this lady doesn't have a plan either. You've got to have a plan. You've got to have a plan, and it's got to make sense to you. And by the way, in my opinion, this is my humble opinion, stay the course and buy and hold to me is not a plan, especially when you're in a more mature age bull market. I'm not saying we can't go up for another year and a half, but another 5 years, I don't think so. I could be wrong. The charts will tell me. If you were buying and holding in 2000 and in mid 2009 or even 2010 or early 2011 when the Fed was going, we're going to cue quantitative easing, we're going to spend trillions of dollars of funny money, and we just came off of 2008. That's a completely different risk environment. Your buy and hold strategy has a much higher probability of success. Now, I hate using Wall Street terms, but I will. Now prices are more fully valued, okay, from a fundamental standpoint, and so the risk is higher. In other words, a sell discipline is more important now that we're in a mature bull market, as they like to say. Also, the closer you are to retirement makes it more important that you have a sell discipline. And you can't just go to bonds because bonds with interest rates rising will likely go down. Food for thought. All right, last one. Let me see. Where is it? Where? Oh, that's the same one. Oh, got two more quick ones. Let me see. Okay. This is a different one, slightly different. It says, can I open a spousal IRA or a Roth IRA if my spouse is retired and over 70 and a half and I make sufficient income from my active working to do so? Now, I'm not sure whether she was talking about for her spouse or for her, but I said, I'm not sure whether you're talking about which spouse, but that said, if you have earned income and you can open up an IRA or a Roth for yourself, it wouldn't be a spousal IRA. You could even open a spousal IRA for your retired spouse. Now, even if he's 70 and a half, over 70, or she, you can do a regular IRA for your spouse. They would have to immediately start taking minimum required distributions, MRDs. So you'd make the $6,500 contribution with the catch-up. You'd take out a little bit for your MRD, but you'd still get a tax deduction. Most people think once you have to start taking minimum required distributions, you can't make contributions to your IRA anymore. Not if you're working and you have income. It's not true. You can. Here's another thing many folks don't know. Damn, I'm good, Don. ERISA rules. If you work at a company that you have your 401k at and you're still making you're 70 and a half, you don't have to take minimum required distributions out of your retirement plan that you're still working at. That's a special clause in the ERISA rules. Now, if you've got a 401k from an old employer that you no longer work at, guess what? You got to, even if you're still working for some new employer, you got to take minimum required distributions. But, and this is the only time, one of two times that it makes sense to roll money into a 401k versus doing an IRA rollover. If you have an old 401k and you have a new 401k that you can roll the money into that you're still working at, you may want to roll the old 401k in the new 401k where you're still working if you don't want to take minimum required distributions, because guess what? You won't have to. Most people don't know that. That's why planning is very important.
Hey, Dan, what's the age at which, if you're still working and you have a 401k, you become eligible to roll some of that out into a self-directed managed IRA?
I think that, so before it used to be, it would be dependent on the plan. The plan could allow it. It wasn't a requirement. I think you're right now. I'll have to look that up. I think they might have changed it where it's either that or it's just become a lot more common. In other words, it used to not be a requirement, but some companies did because they just wanted to let you kind of do your own thing. These people are getting older, and people were going, you know what, I really want to kind of do stuff. I want to get, you know, more choices than these, the 12 mutual funds you got me in. And so to kind of keep these efficient seasoned workers a couple more years versus having them retire early just so they could manage their own IRA, they would let them roll out. Some companies would do it at 62. It may be even 60 now. But, you know, your plan can allow you to do it. Your plan, so that's why it's important to understand the rules of your 401k. Because 401ks can do all types of stuff depending on the plan trustees, what they allow, what investments, and what. So you need to get the plan documents. But I think either ERISA has made it a mandate or they've made it much more friendly to do that because a lot more plans absolutely allow that, Don, and it's either 62 or 60. I know that it's 62, but they might have moved it younger to, they might have moved it up to 60. But just because it might be a mandate at 62, though, doesn't mean your plan, you might not be able to do it at 60. So you need to know if you've got that option. You need to find out, because as soon as you're able to roll your money out into an IRA rollover, you need to do that. It's cheaper for you, and you got sky's the limit on investment choices. You got a lot more choices. By the way, the other thing people need to check on is they need to see if they can do a self-directed 401k within their plan, meaning a lot of plans allow. They don't tell you this, and they don't push it because they'd rather have you keep you in the mutual funds because the employees are paying for the plan costs normally. But they will actually have you. You may have an option where you could go to like Schwab Brokerage or Fidelity Net Benefits or TD's got a special account. So a lot of times you can actually have a full brokerage account with 70, 80, 90% of your assets. We've even got a client that we help help him with his 401k where he can do 100% in a full brokerage account. We can do individual stocks, do whatever he wants. By the way, folks, that is one thing. We help with outside 401ks. Don't think that just because you've got a 401k, you can't help get advice on it or whatever. That's not the case. I know that wasn't a perfect answer, Don, but that was best I got right now.
I'll allow it.
All right. Let's dive deep into the markets, Don. What are your thoughts heading? I know I'm putting you on the spot because it's not the market hasn't closed yet, so you really don't know what to think. But currently, right now, folks, it's about 12:20 Eastern, 11:20 Central. Dow's up 111. Well, that's on the futures. ES is 7.
Come on, Dan. That doesn't mean anything. You got to talk percentages. The numbers don't mean
anything. 45% on the Dow, 25 and 29 on the NASDAQ, 25 on the S&P. Go ahead, Don.
Better, Dan.
Thank you.
Better.
You are trainable. Thank you. I'm always talking percentages, normally.
Well, you weren't there.
You're right.
All right. Now.
I was setting you up. I was teeing you up, man. That was a slow
pitch. Were you?
That was a slow pitch. Hit it out of the park, Don. Hit it out of the park.
I am sticking with what I said in last Friday's Big Show video and also echoed in this past Wednesday's video. Last Friday on 7/6 was an inflection point, being where on the S&P 500 we broke above what had been resistance for a long period of time, that being the 2740-2750 area. We followed up with a gap up on Monday and Tuesday, and then a big gap down on perceived tariff $200 billion additional China tariffs on Wednesday. So we gapped down Wednesday, closed near the bottom of the range. That, of course, was followed up by a gap up on Thursday. Dan, I'm sticking with what I said Wednesday. Any pullback, as long as it's constrained by the 2750 area, is still healthy. We haven't even touched the ADMA on our pullbacks, with the most recent of which happened on Wednesday, as I mentioned. Leading stocks are acting well. A little bit of sector rotation going on, but that's always the case. Now we're above or sitting right at this 2800 round number, almost psychological resistance level. If we can close above that, any pullback next week, form a higher low on the pullback, meaning this 2790 resistance should turn into support. I think we are going to take a run at the all-time high, which is 2783, that was hit back in late January on the S&P 500.
All right, Don.
So let me summarize it again. The key areas,
okay,
as long as we're above 2750, and that's becoming the worst case since we held it on the 7/11 pullback, and now we're testing the upper end of the range at 2800. So look for 2790 to turn from support. Turn from resistance into support on any pullback next week. Worst case, 2750 on a pullback. We're still very healthy.
All right, Don. Folks, If you like what you heard today, tell a friend, tell a neighbor. And again, go to revereasset.com to find out our latest research. And if you want to reach out to us, all of our emails are there. It's Dan at Revere Asset, Don at Revere Asset, Tim at Revere Asset. We actively manage the portfolios in-house here, and you have direct access to the people that are actually managing your money. We're free of conflicts of interest, and we act as your fiduciary. We don't custody assets. We put them at a couple different custodians of your choice, not ours. You can make the decision. And it's all about transparency. Again, you can sign up for our daily market newsletter, and Don's weekend's going to be great this weekend. Make sure you check it out. And if you missed one, you can always go to the website and look at old. You can look at it. You can research us and look at our old past 3 months, what we've said, and see if it has come to fruition. I promise you, we won't spam you or send you a bunch of stuff. It's up to you to reach out to us. And always, if you want to call us old school at 855 Real Wealth, you can do that too. We'll talk to you next week on Your Money.